Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Employment Opportunities in Procurement at the IAEA. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. If you would like to ask a question during the presentation, please use the chat feature located in the lower left corner of your screen, and they will be answered if time allows. If you need to reach an operator at any time, please press star zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Thursday, July 11, 2013. I would now like to turn the conference over to Carol Cook. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone, or maybe I should say good morning or good evening. It's dependent on where you are. My name is Carol Cook. I am the Director of the Office of Procurement Services, known here as MTPS. I am joined today by one of my senior staff, Mark Wade, who is a Senior Procurement Officer, and Jack Preston, who is our Talent Acquisition Manager in HR. Today's presentation will be presented by both Mark and myself. Firstly, we're really pleased to welcome you today and to thank you for your interest in working at the International Atomic Energy Agency, otherwise known as the IAEA. That's hard to say. I can say that I am very excited by the response we've had to this initiative. We have more than 400 people signed up for it, which is quite amazing. So, why are we doing this presentation? In the next 18 months, 11 professional staff members will leave from the IAEA, and in 2 years, 13. That includes the previous 11. This has nothing to do with my management capabilities, I would like to say, but these staff are either rotating out of the institution, retiring, or leaving to go to another job. Just to say that rotation is a policy that the IAEA has for professional staff, and it requires that a certain number of people do not stay in the institution for more than 7 years, including myself. Of course, there are pluses and minuses to this, but it is, in fact, it is a fact, so we work with it. Therefore, the presentation, or the purpose of the presentation, is to give you a better idea of what the IAEA does, what we buy, and how we use it, and the type of people we would like to recruit for the jobs available. This presentation is only half an hour, so if there is time at the end, we will take some questions, but because we have so many people, we are sure we'll not be able to answer them all. However, because we are keen to answer your questions, then we are more than happy to receive them afterwards, and I will indicate to you an email address on my last slide that you can send these to. Additionally, you will have a small survey afterwards, and I would encourage you to complete this, as this helps us plan for these things in the future and tailor them to your needs. I also understand that you're going to receive a copy of the presentation. Okay, so before we dive into the presentation more fully, we thought it would be interesting for Mark and I to tell you a little bit about our backgrounds and how we're here at the IAEA today. So, one of the things you'll get to hear during the presentation is how diverse the organization is in terms of nationalities and education. As you see from this slide, Mark and I are very different people. I was educated in the UK and started my working life at 17, not a great educational background, but went into PR and sports sponsorship. However, I was gripped by the travel bug and at 22 started working as a holiday rep for a youth operator in Greece and Spain, and then moved into management with the tour operator that bought out our company. I left the company then after a number of years and set up my own business to support my studies for a master's degree, which I got in my early 30s. And it was at this point that I started to look around at how I could use this degree, and then I applied for the job at the IMF, which is where I was up until about 3 months ago. This took me to DC, where I started out managing the travel and shipping operations as well as procuring those types of services. About 3 years ago, I moved pure, as I would say, into procurement, where I became responsible for the strategic sourcing team. Last year, I applied for the position of director here, and I am currently on leave of absence from the IMF, which I can take up to 5 years. I made the choice to join the IAEA because I believe this job will challenge my skills and abilities and keep me on a growth path. And in particular, I like the organization's mission. And I can say today, I've not been disappointed. Mark, I'll hand over to you.
Thank you, Carol. My name is Mark Wade. I was born in Chicago, where my father was a scientist at the Argonne National Laboratory. I grew up in Livermore, when he worked at the laboratory there. I got a relatively useless degree in physical anthropology from UCLA, and thereafter in 1974 began my career in procurement. For the first half of my career, I worked for aerospace companies, primarily Northrop Grumman, manager of subcontracts for development of the avionics for the F-20 aircraft, in charge of co-production of the F-18 in Spain, and foreign assignments in Iran and Saudi Arabia, as well as Spain. Thereafter, I moved to the United Nations, working at the Food and Agricultural Organization in Rome for 3 years, and then came to the agency in 1994, and I've been here ever since. I think you'll see why when we get to the quality of life in Vienna slide at the end. It's been very interesting. You'll see the work is very diverse here, and I find it very professionally fulfilling. Carl?
Thank you, Mark. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the UN and how procurement fits into this structure. The next two slides will address this. Okay. So we're a specialized agency of the United Nations. We're described as an international organization, and we seek to promote the peaceful use of nuclear energy and to inhibit its use for any military purpose, including nuclear weapons. The IAEA was established on the 29th of July in 1957, so we're fast approaching our 45th birthday. Although we are established independently of the United Nations through its own international treaty, the IAEA statute does report to both the UN General Assembly and the Security Council. As you know, we're headquartered in Vienna, Austria. We have 2,400 staff, of which 40 are procurement staff. The IAEA has two regional safeguards offices, which are located in Toronto, Canada, and in Tokyo, Japan. We also have two liaison offices, which are located in New York City and in Geneva, Switzerland. In addition, we have three laboratories, one here in Vienna, one in Cybersdorf, which is a small town south of Vienna, and one in Monaco, which is our marine biology lab. We have a budget of $600 million, of which about 63% goes through procurement. The remainder is staff salaries, etc. We are using words here such as safeguards and talking about things that we do in our laboratories, which we'll actually talk about a little bit more and explain, so don't worry. Our role is to serve as an intergovernmental forum for scientific and technological cooperation in the peaceful use of nuclear technology and nuclear power worldwide. As you know, our tagline is Atoms for Peace. But not only do we promote the peaceful applications of nuclear technology, we also have programs that provide international safeguards against misuse of nuclear technology and nuclear materials, and we also promote nuclear safety, including radiation protection and nuclear security standards and their implementation. Our current director is Mr. Amano, Director General Amano. He's a Japanese citizen, but you may well have heard of some of our other director generals who are fairly famous, such as Mohammed El-Baradei, who has been in the news a lot lately. We also, one of our past DGs is also Hans Blix, who is from Sweden. We're very proud because on October 2005, Mohammed El-Baradei and the IAEA were jointly awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about how procurement fits into the IAEA structure. Basically, we are one of six departments. The other five departments I would describe as technical departments. So we sit in that fourth box along that you will see, green box, that says the Department of Management. There's a little note underneath that says that we, part of the Department of Management includes all the types of general services that you can imagine, HR, budget and finance, and public information, as well as conference and document services. So we sit in there with these folks. I'll pass you to Mark, who will actually tell you about the other five departments that, as I noted, were more technical departments and what they actually do. Mark?
Thank you, Carol. I'm going to describe some of the projects that are technical departments do so you'll understand the sort of equipment and services that you'll be involved in the procurement of. The first department on the left is nuclear applications, and this involves the use of nuclear technology for peaceful uses in the areas of medicine, such as cancer therapy, which involves medical accelerators, radiotherapy machines, production and use of radiopharmaceuticals, cyclotrons for radiopharmaceutical production, hot cells and synthesis modules for producing those radiopharmaceuticals, for medical diagnosis, which involves gamma cameras, radioactive tracers, and radioactive sterilizers for blood and food. In the area of pest control, there is something called the sterile insect technique, where we take tsetse flies or screw worms or whatever the insect pest is targeted. They're sterilized using radiation, then released into the area that's infected, and the since it cannot produce offspring, it eradicates the pest without the use of pesticides. There's a whole area in NA of environmental studies where we use radioactive tracers for ground hydrology to understand water courses, marine ecology to understand the food chain in the marine and river environments, and neutron moisture sensors for geology. In the area of nuclear energy, procurement gets less involved. This area involves mainly supporting nuclear power in the member states, including conferences on reactor technology, national power grids, and preparing member states for the operation of nuclear power plants. Our involvement here chiefly is in IT system support and reactor simulation software. Nuclear safety and security is the lead department in those areas. This involves field projects in nuclear safety, which include environmental radiation monitoring of workers, premises, and entry-exit points at nuclear facilities, and in nuclear security, upgrading security at member state nuclear facilities, including physical security, barriers, surveillance, radiation portal monitors for people, vehicles, trains, and containers at national borders. Now, safeguards, as Carl mentioned, enforces the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty. We have inspectors who travel the world to our member states' nuclear facilities to ensure that fissile material is not diverted to military uses. This involves systems of seals, surveillance cameras, radiation monitors, supported by specialized safeguards and radiation spectrometers to verify the contents of sealed or inaccessible containers. This is backed by a complex hardware and software systems at headquarters, fed via satellites by an international network of sensors. They also conduct independent assessment of what's going on in nation states through open source intelligence, satellite imagery, and other sources. We also get involved in contracts for local construction to upgrade safeguards installations at reactors and fuel processing facilities. Finally, technical cooperation assists member states and our less developed countries in the peaceful use of nuclear technology. Technical backstopping is provided by the other three departments I just mentioned, although most technical cooperation projects are in the area of nuclear applications. This results in a very diverse procurement requirements, including all kinds of laboratory equipment, analytical equipment, rice harvesters, cattle, blood, any kind of thing you can imagine relating to agriculture, medicine, industry, and non-destructive testing. Finally, of course, not shown here is the Department of MT where we work, but which also does the entire infrastructure for the agency and its laboratories. So here we're involved in the more routine type of procurements typical for any large organization, hardware and software in support of a very sophisticated IT system and infrastructure, elevator maintenance, cleaning, printers, paper, the usual types of things. Carl?
I tell you what, Mark, I found something very interesting. I was recently lucky enough to go down to Cybersdorf and visit the laboratories, and I got to see how they actually sterilized those fruit flies and how successful that program has been, and it was really quite exciting. The other thing that I found quite interesting is the banana tree program, that they're trying to grow smaller banana trees so that they're more resistant to hurricanes, but still produce the same amount of fruit. So, you know, those were a couple of things that I thought were really, really fascinating. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about budget. Okay, so from a procurement standpoint, we told you that the overall budget is around about 600 million euro. From a procurement standpoint, we see about 250 million euro in, dollars in spend. And you can see that safeguards and management form the bulk of that spend. And you can understand that with what Mark's just told you, but also along with the technical corporation. And then the other groups are smaller. So it's quite interesting that, that safeguards is obviously a priority for us, naturally. Okay, Mark, you're doing the next few slides. Then I'll pick up more about the types of people we want to recruit and our vision for the future.
All right, Carl. So what are the big projects we're working on that you could be expected to be involved in the next few years? At the top of the list are the agency laboratories in Cybersdorf that Carl mentioned. They're located 25 miles south of Cybersdorf on the in the town of Cybersdorf, from Vienna in the town of Cybersdorf, on the campus of the Austrian Institute of Technology. We're doing a major expansion there of the Safeguards Clean Lab Extension and Nuclear Materials Laboratory. Now, this is where they take samples taken at all these locations around the world that they are monitoring and test them to see if there's been a diversion of materials, if there's any suspect that material has been enriched beyond allowable levels or has come from a location where it shouldn't have. The facilities there were built in the 1960s and 1970s and were long overdue for replacement. So this is a major, about $80 million project, construction project. We're about 60% of the way through right now. Following that, starting next year, there's going to be also an extension and modernization of the Nuclear Applications Laboratory. This is the laboratory that does the things that Carl was mentioning involving dosimetry, environmental analysis, use of the sterile insect technique, plant breeding and genetics, water management and crop nutrition, food and environmental production, animal health, and there'll be new facilities related to our agency's PAC anti-cancer project. Next on the list of major projects in the next few years is the low-enriched uranium fuel bank. This is a storage place for low-enriched uranium that can be used in member states' reactors. The idea is to provide it to member states that may want guaranteed access to low enrichment uranium to discourage them from doing it themselves. This is about a $150 million project that will involve procurement of 60 tons of low enriched uranium. The next large category of projects is our software and hardware systems development. So these are complex systems involving bespoke complex statements of work and specifications. We do it for safeguards and for the business agency-wide. Here's a few pictures just to show the laboratory, the kinds of safeguards, equipment, and seals we buy. The lower right, a fuel canister of the type we'll be buying for the fuel bank. Next. And I'm not going to read this, obviously, but this just shows the diversity of the equipment, services, and the technical nature of our job. These are all things we are procuring year in and year out. Basically, we have a governance framework at the agency wherein the director general naturally is the authority for the financial administration. He delegates to our deputy director general for management, who we report to, and she approves all procurements over 1 million euros. Then Carl, as the director of the Office of Procurement Services, is responsible and accountable for the procurement function of the agency. And then she delegates, in turn, procurement authority to our contracting officers, our procurement officers, and other agency staff. These governance framework is written out and enforced through a a series of financial rules, administrative rules, procurement operating procedures, and then low-value purchasing procedures. We have a corporate card program here outside of MTPS.
And then for the next three slides, Mark, let's just touch on the process a little bit and the challenges, and then we'll move over to the new structure that we're looking at.
Now, the approach we're using at the agency is not lowest bid, but best value for money. And so we're trying to do what's in the agency's best interest in every procurement, including when we establish the requirements. So this involves, first of all, for the low-value purchases, having minimal overhead. So that's been delegated to the operating divisions, and they do that using cards, basically. For all the higher-value purchases, we achieve best value for money by considering the whole life cost, not just the lowest purchase price, and we will accept a higher cost for more capability or lower risk or soft benefits. Best value for money for us means doing simply what is in the best interest of the agency and not letting rules prevent you from using your common sense. The only requirement is that your judgment has to be documented and quantified whenever possible. Of course, we're fundamentally, we're always looking for international, fair, and transparent competition. Whereas the requesters always want everything, all three priorities to be fulfilled, in our experience, there's always a negotiation of trade-offs. You can have triangle. You can either have it fast, cheap, or good, time, cost, or quality. You can have any two of these, but you can never have all three. You can never get it on time, at cost, and at highest quality. So there's always a trade-off for each procurement.
Would you say that's one of your biggest challenges?
This is the biggest challenge in order to assess best value for money, is what is the appropriate mix in each case.
Okay.
Now, this is our basic procurement process, which is pretty much the same as any other organization. We emphasize planning from the beginning. For very high-value procurements, we'll get involved with the requesting departments at the time they're formulating the requirements. We do a market analysis to see who the players are, develop a strategy, how we're going to obtain best value for money, our bid evaluation criteria, and work with the departments to make the final specification. After the plan is approved, we do the bidding, the evaluation, the source selection, management approvals, then the contract negotiation and award, and then the hard work begins, the post-award administration.
Okay, so let me take it from here. In the near future, we'll reorganize from the current structure that we have of two teams into five teams, as you can see up here on the screen. Each of these teams, so Team A through Team E, will be headed up by either a P4 position or a P5 position. These are the highest level of professional positions before you enter into the director level. And these are referred to as senior procurement officers, and they have as they are leading a team, they will have a team lead tag associated to their job title and their job description. Each senior procurement officer will have between 5 and 9 staff reporting to them, depending on which team that you fall into. The staff reporting to the senior procurement officers will be made up of a mix of professional staff. These are what we call the P-level staff, as well as senior procurement assistants who are our G staff. So the objective of restructuring this way is meant to solve several things. It's flattening the structure and removing one supervisory layer that we didn't feel was creating any value. Hence, it allows staff to be one or two steps away from the director. And it also increases the number of people that report into the director as well, because currently there are just three. This will also give some of the staff the ability to climb up through the structure to a team lead position, as well as giving more staff the opportunity of a significant leader role. I believe also that this will increase the communication and the mentoring and development of the staff. Just to mention that the dotted lines below, while most of the procurement is centralized, the dotted lines are there with because they allow people to have authority to purchase, but they work very closely with procurement. So that's what they mean. Let's take a little bit more about the roles of each of these teams. Team A, the first box on the left, which says Department of Management, is purchasing more of the standard corporate type of goods and services that keep the operation running that Mark just described. Team B, D, and E buy more of the technical goods and services and equipment, and this is, again, what Mark's just spent some time describing to you. These teams, including A, are supposed to add value to the process through their technical and commercial capabilities. The procurement officers will add, as I should say, through their technical and commercial capabilities, such as negotiating savings or further soft benefits. Whereas Team C, that says strategic resource planning and purchasing below 10K, is involved more with the director. So there is currently a P5 there in that position, and they are responsible also in the assistance with the director of planning, the allocation of resources, managing procurement's performance, the division's performance, the handling of the contracts committee, because contracts above 150 have to go before a contracts committee for recommendation, answers to or responses to audits, handling the budget, and then as well as handling the low value purchasing program and low value purchases. So any below the 10K will flow through the system. So you can see that obviously, in order for these numbers to be numbers of staff to be fairly even, it means that we do a significant amount of purchasing actually under 25,000. So we're currently setting the level at 10K. This will be flexible to be adjusted dependent on the workloads. And the value really for this team is turning the procurements around in a short period of time. There will also be a P4 in this team helping to manage the LVP team. As I said, this structure should allow us to be flexible to meet the ever-growing mandate of the agency. Like anyone, we all have to manage more with less. Managers will be closer to their staff to monitor the workloads and maximize these resources. The structure allows us to pass staff between the various divisions as necessary. And additionally, we can up the low-value purchasing amount and add more G staff on a temporary basis if we need to, in order to handle any additional work that comes in through the division. Let me tell you what we're recruiting for. We're recruiting for at least two P5 positions. Two of these divisions will be handled by P5, and three of them will be handled by a P4. Three of them will be handled by a P5, and two of them will be handled by a P4. One of the P5s is staying here. Additionally, there are a number of P3, P2, and P1 positions that we're recruiting for that will fall into some of these different teams. So moving on to the next slide, I'm going to talk a little bit more about the type of people we would like to recruit. Okay. So you see two sets of boxes here. The first box describes a significant amount of the attributes we would like to see in the people we recruit. I want to emphasize a point here that if you look at the job descriptions, we have not made procurement certifications mandatory. We have also not overly emphasized experience in procurement because we believe that we can train people. This is not rocket science. We can train people if they have all the other necessary skills that we need. However, I have to be careful in that this still requires some balance of people. We can't have 100% of people without procurement experience, but we can certainly take some people. And my emphasis really is more on the business-minded, the curious, quick learner, the communication skills, and the good judgment and logical skills. Those are things particularly important. In the second box, this really applies more to the P4 and 5 positions in terms of what I'm looking for. But we have something here at the IAEA called the Leadership Blueprint, and it's actually on our website, and I will direct you to it in my last slide. But it describes all the skills and behaviors of people that are leading teams, of what we require, and I think it's very important to look at that. But in summary, you know, we need you to innovate and administer. You need to be able to develop as well as maintain. You need to be able to inspire, yet still be in control, be strategic as well as tactical, and ask the what, why, and well, and how, and when, and also lead and manage. Now, I'm just going to take a couple of examples. So if we talk about leading through self, and I'm looking at the leadership blueprint here, but if we talk about leading through self, we're looking for people that, you know, have no room for ego. They're not pursuing a personal agenda, that they recognize that the agency's objectives are more important than their own. In the learning and adapting side of things, in terms of leading yourself, you know, we want people who consciously adapt to the style or to the situation that's happening. We don't want people that ignore the evidence and continue to behave in the same way rather than learning new approaches. Something else as well is, you know, dealing with difficult situations. We want them to be tackling the complex and challenging situations and avoid procrastinating. If I look at leading through delivery, then I would look for things like people who are able to make, who can demonstrate that they can make decisions, you know, that they can assess and manage risks, they're daring to make decisions, they involve people and resist over consensus, and they're able to stand by their decisions and are accountable. And I'm not looking for somebody who is avoiding making those types of decisions. I also would like somebody who's able to cut across the silos. We are quite a silo-based organization, and there are a lot of efforts to break that down, and we need people that can contribute to that, rather than keeping the knowledge and activity only within their team or in their own mind. Additionally, I want people that are seeking to improve the processes and practices that demand high standards. I want to avoid people who appear to be looking like they're staying the same. So here's some of the things, here's some of the skills and things that I'm looking for. I hope that gives you a good idea. Obviously, if you have more questions with regard to this, then I'm more than happy to answer those afterwards. Okay. Let me talk a little bit about some of the things that we are looking to achieve as a division. So as the title, and I'm reluctant to read titles, but I think this one's important. In the short and medium term, the plan for procurement is to be a more customer-orientated, commercially focused, and operationally excellent operation. And I want it so that this place is exciting to work in. I want people to want to work in it, and that they want to work with us. So, you know, a showcase within the agency. But some of the areas that we need to work on, I'm not saying we're bad at them. I just think we need to increase our capabilities and step up on some of these things. But we need to interact more proactively with the vendor community. Sometimes we are overly focused on risk avoidance. And this can include not communicating with our vendors as much as we could do, but we could certainly do a lot more outreach with them. Some good outreach has been done, but we could do more. We have recently, this division has been through a lot of change in the last few years. One of the big changes is that they implemented Oracle, and for those of you that have implemented or been through an implementation of an ERP system, you know it's very painful, and it continues to be painful for a number of years. And we are still somewhat going through that pain, I would say, although it is getting better. But, you know, we've implemented the technology now. We should be able to implement other pieces of technology that either occur within Oracle, because that's the platform that we've decided to go with, or other technologies that are not Oracle that can be integrated into the system. So it's important for us to have somebody who is technology-focused and understands the benefits of pushing the envelope in this way. The other thing I'd like to see us do is create more leverage, both internally and externally with our customers, because we need to educate our people internally about the benefits of doing procurement. They often don't plan to procure, and when they have to cut their timelines down, they often want to cut out the procurement piece, and we need to do a better job of explaining to them why it's important to go through that process. And the other thing is we need to be more thoughtful about how we go about negotiating our savings or other soft benefits that we might be able to get, rather than allowing a process just to play that role, because you simply don't achieve everything you can if you just run it through the through a process. We want to educate our users to increase our effectiveness. A lot of our users change over time, and we have done training sessions with them. They're always very successful, but we need to roll those out in a formal, more formal and consistent way. I would like to also shift the staff thinking from to be more proactive and to be a problem solver. We've got good quality staff here. I am really proud of them. I think we can do a bit more to perhaps focus less on the smaller risks and more on the opportunities that we might be able to take up to achieve better things. Quite simply, we should deliver our services more consistently. Our templates are somewhat outdated, and there's a lot of administratively, there's a lot of things that we could do to be more efficient. And as I said earlier, I just simply want to make this a more exciting place, not more exciting, but I want to keep it as an exciting place to work in, because the work is very interesting, and the people are really nice. So we want to maintain that and enhance that as well. So that's kind of where I'm going on this. Now, in terms of benefits of working at the IAEA, I've listed them here, so I don't necessarily have to describe them all, but you get paid a net salary, so you're not necessarily having to deal with the tax man in your country. You also get home leave every 2 years. Home leave is you're entitled to an airfare for you and your family, or the dependents that are accepted as dependents, to go back home so that you maintain ties with your country. Or you can exchange that for cash if you take a lesser amount. There is some supplemental assistance in the housing. So if your rent is costs above a certain level, then you can receive for a certain amount of time, you can receive some assistance. There is a housing bureau here, which I have to say I have recently used, and it is excellent. And it does help you with things like searching for an apartment, your contract, because these things are usually done in the language of this country, which is German. And I don't speak German, so as I said, it was very helpful for me. You get the European holidays, the 6 weeks vacation. Plus, we work on a flex time basis here, and you can accrue at the time that you work over certain hours, you can actually accrue 10 more days in the 6 months. So in fact, you 10 days in 12 months, and the school system here is excellent. And we also have a commissary here that sells food and goods and items, and they are non-taxed, and as a staff member, you would have access to that as well. Now, Mark, really, you and I should chat about the drawbacks, because I don't know if there really are too many. One thing for me would be the language, but not in the office. Is that a drawback? I think it's more trying to get an electrician and communicate with him, or a plumber, where that's been more difficult, but you can get by. There are means and ways, but that is something you have to think about. Do you want to talk a little bit more about the spousal employment?
Well, if you're not an EU citizen, your spouse would probably have difficulty getting a work permit to work in Austria. A lot of spouses manage to find positions with other UN agencies. We're not alone here. There's four or five other UN agencies here in the Vienna International Center. There's the OSCE and some other international bodies in town, so they can find employment there as well. Carl mentioned the rotation policy. You have to realize that most likely you'll be returning home or have to move on to another job in 5 to 7 years. May not really be a drawback, because that's longer than the average employment period for a lot of countries without any limit, but that's the policy of the agency. And the winters here are not so much snow, but they're kind of gray in Vienna anyway. If you're a skier, you go out on the weekends, you get above the clouds and you're up in the sunshine at the ski resorts, so then it's not a drawback. So it depends on your nature and where you're from. Since I was raised in California, for me, it gets a little depressing making it through the winters here.
Since I was raised in the UK, it doesn't matter. Okay, so let's move on to the next slide, and we'll go through these very quickly because these are just really the, some of the benefits of being here before we close. But there are many benefits of living in Vienna, and you may want to point out just a few of these.
Right. Well, I mean, basically, Vienna has been rated year after year as having the highest quality of living in the world. Trades places with Zurich in some years, but it's basically the best place to live. There's an enormous number of outside activities. We're at the foothills of the Alps here. There's mountains, hiking, climbing. Of course, there's all kinds of historical sites, if you like that, castles, Roman ruins, medieval architecture, cute little towns in the mountains. They have fantastic public transportation. A lot of people never get an automobile here. They just stay in Vienna. And they can get anywhere using the existing rail and flight links. Of course, Vienna, if you're into culture, is the world's classical music center. It has three opera houses operating simultaneously as the largest repertoire in the world. There's lots of family activities in town as well. There's the Danube Island that has all kinds of recreational facilities, the Prater, many parks. Of course, this is an international capital. There's all kinds of international restaurants in town aside from the Austrian
cooking. And let's not forget the excellent Austrian wine as well.
There's there's something here called Heutigen, which is where the wineries have little restaurants attached, and they open on a rotation basis, and typically you go out there with your friends and have a little wine, eat a little bit, sit out in the garden. And if you're worried about English language, there is two theaters in town that do English live action theater, and there are also three cinemas, multiplexes that run English films. So basically, it's just to give you an idea very briefly what the opportunities are. In the last week, I personally went to see the opera Aida in Bratislava, which is the capital of Slovakia next to us. We went to a city, a wine festival in my town where I'm living. And we went to see a farce at the English Theater in Baden, south of Vienna. We went to a musical. We went to a thermal bath in Bad Rockersburg by the Slovenian border on Saturday. And we spent 3 days in Croatia on the Adriatic on Sunday through Tuesday. And last night we went to see La Boheme, an open-air opera at a Roman quarry, and tomorrow night we're going out with friends to an Indian restaurant. So these are the kind of opportunities that are available to you, and if you're into more athletic endeavors, the agency helps you there. They have hiking clubs, cycling clubs, golf clubs, boating clubs, and everything to connect you with the local people in that area.
Yeah, I've already joined about three or four of those. Okay. So we're coming to a close of our presentation. As I said, we encourage you to send questions to Jack Preston, who I introduced earlier in the presentation, and his email address is on this slide. I've also given you some other URLs that I think would be helpful or interesting for you, but there is a lot on the website, so I do encourage you to go there. I am conscious of time. I will run just a couple more minutes. I noticed that we have a few questions. I will just take a couple of questions, and then I will close the presentation. But one of the questions I see here, it says, can a candidate apply for more than one position? The answer to that is yes, you can, and you should apply for all the positions that you think you're capable of. Please make sure you read the job descriptions first to make sure that you're matched with those, but yes, you can apply for more than one. Do we have any Korean staff in the procurement team? The answer is no.
No.
And I'm just checking, but there's no reason why we shouldn't. We do have quotas, but our philosophy is the best person for the job. Okay, let me see if there's any more. Somebody says, do I need a college degree? I think you need to study the job descriptions and see if it requires a degree. The P1 and P2 definitely don't. You can have procurement experience that will count for that. The other ones, it is we would prefer that you do, obviously, but you should still apply. are you following the UN procurement guidelines? I would say yes, to a certain degree, but not entirely, because we are a specialised agency which allows us to set our own rules and regulations to a certain extent. Another question is there e-procurement development at the IAEA? We do have e-procurement through the Oracle platform. Can we do more? Yes, but obviously we would be willing to look at it and evaluate whether it would be beneficial to us. I think, do the IAEA provide internal language courses, German?
Yes, they do. They pay for part of the cost. You have to pay part of it, but they subsidize most of it. In not just German, but in Russian, French, Spanish, etc.
Okay. I think, to be honest, that's all we have time for in terms of questions, so I'd like to thank everybody for joining us today. We hope that this encourages you to apply for the jobs that are currently advertised. And if you, again, I want to reiterate, if you do have questions, because there's a lot coming through here online, I would suggest that you contact Jack Preston and we'll do our best to answer all of them. So I'd like to wish you a good evening and thank you. And that concludes our presentation for today.